Support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers,
and from the law firm of Primer, Piper, Eggleston, and Kramer, providing comprehensive legal counsel to New Hampshire businesses and their owners for more than 30 years. For more information or to speak to an attorney, visit primer.com. And from the New Hampshire Department of Agriculture, Markets, and Food. New Hampshire's farms and farmers markets are full of fresh goods, rich with agricultural heritage, and available all year long. You can locate pick-your-own-farms, farmers markets, fairs, and more near you using the directories at visitnh.gov/agriculture.
From New Hampshire Public Radio, I'm Laura Kanoy, and this is The Exchange. New Hampshire's state park system began in 1881 with the acquisition of Miller State Park in Peterborough, and in 2016, the state added its latest property, Lafayette Brook Tract in Franconia. Today, there are 93 sites under state parks, from blockbusters like Hampton and Sunapee to tranquil, tucked-away places like Pisgah or Deer Mountain. And in recent years, more visitors and Granite Staters alike have been flocking to these special spots, bringing in revenue but also, at times, straining natural resources. Balancing it all is our guest today, Philip Bryce. He's director of New Hampshire's Division of Parks and Recreation. We're sitting down with him this hour, and we'd love to hear from you. Our email, exchange@nhpr.org. Once again, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange, or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Director Bryce, nice to see you. Welcome back to The Exchange.
Thank you. Great to be here.
How's the summer season been so far?
It's been very good. We've had spring was a little wet, and so it was a little bit of a cold, wet start, but our beaches are going strong, and particularly Hampton, of course. Our campgrounds are pretty much full on weekends. We've seen an increase in the last, since 2013, of about 30% increase in our visitation.
Wow, that's a lot, 30%.
So it's nice because our mission is to get people outdoors, enjoying the outdoors, because it's good for your health, it's good for your frame of mind, and it's wonderful to see that.
What parks are the busiest in the summer, Director Bryce?
Well, I would say, of course, Hampton Beach is the busiest. I think we have up to 2 million visitors to that park alone. Franconia Notch State Park is pretty busy. Monadnock, Pawtuckaway, Bear Brook. Of course, we have a lot of parks that, you know, about half our parks are free, so we have a lot of attendance that we don't know is occurring in some of our locations and on our state forests. But those are our some of our biggest ones.
So, as you said, a lot of the parks are free, and the natural areas and the wayside areas and the historic sites. How do the sort of blockbusters like the Hamptons and the Sunapees help pay for, you know, the Pisgahs, the Deer Mountains, the other smaller, lesser known ones?
Yeah, it's interesting. We have great statutes. The legislature has passed great statutes in how the park operates financially, and it allows us. It actually says not all parks are intended to be self-supporting. That it's right in law. And what that says is that the parks that can make money, like Franconia Notch, which provides almost half the revenue in the park system, will support, you know, the maintenance of a little wayside area. Or you know, we charge it roughly half the parks, and of those, only half make money. So there are parks where we charge, but they still lose money, and they need that support too, because they're very, you know, people get very, very attached to particular parks, and it's important to be able to adequately maintain them and improve them. So that works out, that way we're set up works out very well, even though we're in a, you know, we're operationally self-funded.
So give us a little more on that. My understanding is, Director Bryce, correct me if I'm wrong, please, that New Hampshire state parks are the only ones that are self-funded. In other words, the fees pay for the parks. You don't get general fund revenue.
Yeah. Our historic sites are generally funded, and actually they're under the commissioner's office. But our park system, we raise all our revenue to operate. And other park systems are very, across the country, are very sort of envious of the way we're structured, because increasingly they're having to move to more self-funding. Some park systems like Vermont, they receive a lot of revenue from their ski area leases. That supports a lot of it, but not directly from operations. And so it actually works – you know, now that we had about a $2.6 million deficit in 2006.
I remember that.
And due to the support of the legislature, you know, governor's office, park staff, partners, we were able to get out of that to the point where we have enough of a surplus to be comfortable for a bad year, you know, if we have a poor weather year because we're so dependent on weather. So that model works, but you do have to have parks like the Flume that generate a lot of surplus revenue in order to be able to function. And we're able to do that. We're able to do that and then put it back into the parks. You know, like the North region loses money. But, you know, the North region parks are critical to that tourism economy. So you wouldn't want to have all the money going back into just, well, any surplus money generated a park goes back into that park, because then what do you do for the ones that don't?
Well, how does that fit in, that funding model, fit in with the broader mission of the state park system?
Well, I've spent about half my career in the private sector. So in the private sector, while, you know, businesses can be very mission focused, you know, and you know, for good, you know, to provide an excellent product or service or whatever that is, ultimately their purpose is to, you know, they've got to generate a profit. We try to generate a profit, so to speak, although it's not the right word for a state agency, but we try to generate a surplus so that we can carry out our mission. Whereas the mission of a private sector business is to make a profit. So we have to constantly remember that, because we have to stay focused on controlling costs, generating revenue. But we also have to remember that the reason we're doing that is to provide the best possible experience for our visitors and to take care of these places.
So it's a dual mission, Director Bryce. It's to get people outdoors and it's to take care of these special natural places.
Yeah. Even if people don't go to a place, we still need to take care of it.
And why is that? If someone's never going to go way up north to Deer Mountain or some of the other fabulous parks there, why should somebody in Nashua care about Deer Mountain, you know, which is almost in Canada?
Well, I had way back in the Northern Forest Lands Council days when we were dealing with big land sales in New England, a woman said, you know, I'm never going to go up there, but it's nice to know it's there. And so I think it plays into knowing these places are there and that they're very they're available and they're special. And of course, that may not mean something directly to you, but it may be to a family member. And so these, you know, Teddy Roosevelt, of course, I go back to Teddy Roosevelt. He was a big supporter of having places, very special, unique places available to the public, not just to people that could afford to buy that land and they hold it and they keep it, you know, they keep it for themselves. So I think the important piece is to have, and we're really lucky in New Hampshire because I think it's diversity within proximity. I mean, you can be at Hampton Beach with like 80,000 people in the morning and you can get up to Connecticut Lakes Headwaters where the state has an easement and owns the roads and be miles from anyone, all in the same state, in the same basic park and reservation system. And that, and then in between, you got all the lakes, you got Mount Washington, you got all kinds of parks like Pawtuckaway where you can go climbing, you got places of, you know, significant geologic issues, significance, you've got like Madison Boulder, you've got, of course, you've got our wonderful historic sites.
And also to the question about why anybody should care if they only go to one state park or they never get out. Now we hear a lot, Director Bryce, about so-called ecosystem services. Uh-huh. So those parks that you may never visit are helping to filter the water, keep the air clean, and so forth. So there's that as well.
Yes. We have a system of what we call state reservations. So we don't have a park is just a name in many respects, or a state forest. And so you can use a state forest for recreation. You could even put a campground there. Livermore Falls, that area is actually in a state forest, and it's a wonderful site along the river there. And so, yes, our system of reservations in our agency provides all of that. You know, there's timber harvesting, water quality, wildlife habitat, and of course, recreation.
Well, Director Bryce, we've got lots of people who want to talk to you already. So when we ask people on Facebook, too, what their favorite New Hampshire State Park is, why they love it. So I want to share some of those with you as well. And you can call in with your questions or comments about New Hampshire State Parks. What is your favorite park? What would you like to see change with our state park system? We'd love to hear from you. Our number, 1-800-892-6477. This hour on The Exchange, we're sitting down with Philip Bryce. He's director of New Hampshire Parks and Recreation. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. Or you can email us, exchange@nhpr.org. And Director Bryce, let's go to the phone. Steve's calling from Nottingham. Hi, Steve. Go ahead. You're in the air.
Good morning, and I want to thank you. Thank you for a particular state park and all the state parks. And the reason I'm calling is that I'm a volunteer with the Pequot Lake Improvement Association, and we've been having a struggle with invasive weeds, milfoil. And what we've had is incredible cooperation and working together in alliance with the folks at Pequot State Park. They work with us. They work together with us. And it's a pleasure to see that level of cooperation for something we all want, which is a better lake.
Well, Steve, I'm so glad you called, because we should talk about some of the issues concerning New Hampshire lakes, including those in state parks. What about invasive species in some of these lakes, like the lake at Pequot State Park, Director Bryce?
Yes. We would obviously work with organizations like that, and I'd like to thank Steve for him volunteering, because our system is as successful as it is because of our volunteers. We work with DES. We'd work with DES to deal with invasives. Right now, one of the biggest issues we're facing is water quality related to geese, and keeping the geese off the beach. And so we've had higher bacteria counts this year than we would like to, and that's always a struggle. And it's a struggle not just for us, but for other park systems. So there are those, you have a lot of challenges, and you don't think of those sometimes, but, you know, geese, invasives, you know, there's a constant pressure to try to make sure that people can have a nice experience when they visit our beaches.
Well, and so DES, Department of Environmental Services, what tactics are the two of you taking to combat this milfoil problem? I was in Wadley State Park, I think, a week or two ago, and I have to say the swimming felt a little bit creepy because milfoil was brushing up against my legs.
Yeah, what Steve mentions, within our agency, we don't have a real aggressive effort, you know, ourselves that we're doing it. We rely on DES, and when an area gets to that level where work needs to be done or treatment needs to be done, you know, we would work with them. So,
and in terms of the geese, again, I visit a lot of state parks. I was up at Forest Lake State Park last week, and I saw two creatures on the beach, and I was the only one there, by the way. And I thought, okay, is that a coyote? Is that a fox? What is that? And it turns out it was a plastic statue of a coyote to scare geese away. So, and there were two of them on this beach, but from far away, I thought, is that for real? As I got closer, I realized, and there were signs there saying, do not touch, property of the state of New Hampshire. This is to scare the geese away.
Yeah.
But there was some goose excrement on the beach.
Yeah.
Not a lot, but it's tough, isn't it? You got a lot to concern yourself with, and some of these parks just don't have the staff to manage it.
Yeah, well, Forest Lake isn't staffed full-time. Actually, we don't charge there, but I know it's a really, really important park to the local community. And, yeah, so if folks have ideas about how to keep geese off the beach, you know, let dogs put up barriers so they can't see the water. It's, there's all kinds of ideas. We're up to listen to those to see if we can come up with a solution, so...
Well, Steve, thank you for the call. Again, our number, 1-800-892-6477. We got an email before the show, Director Bryce, from Charlie, who says, I visit state parks frequently and all over the country. One thing I've noticed in recent years about New Hampshire state parks is the attention paid to picnic tables, Charlie says, the focal point of many state park camping experiences for family and friends. Charlie says, I wonder if the director could talk about the, quote, little things like picnic tables, restrooms, paint, and just basic physical appearance of our state park facilities, and how attention to these details can add up to a more memorable park experience. Charlie's right. You go to a state park and then you go to the ladies' room and it's messy. You kind of go, oh, I don't know how I feel about this.
Yeah, Charlie makes an excellent point. When I came on board, we were still in a deficit in the parks fund, and we needed to do something to show, to show that it was worth investing in the park system, and that you could make a difference in by doing some small things. And so we started working on just refurbishing our picnic tables and making sure they're painted, because as he points out, it's particularly for camping, it's kind of like the center of your universe. And you don't want to have something that's rotten and falling apart and disgusting, whatever. So that's been, an ongoing focus. And we have thousands of picnic tables in our park system. And so it is a constant effort to do that. But it's not only that, it's keeping the grounds. So we can't always have a brand new, $1 or $10 million facility. But as a visitor, when I show up and I see that things are painted, that they're straight and level, that the weeds are trimmed back, and it looks like it's cared for, it just creates such a better experience. And our staff is really, really, they know that, they get at that, and so they do pay attention to those. It's very important to pay attention to those details. And, of course, clean bathrooms. We often get comments from folks, that are camping on how clean our bathrooms are. Because I've camped throughout the country, too. And I was at a campground, not to pick on Wisconsin, but the staff had this beautiful new office. It was absolutely gorgeous. And you go to the bathroom, and the thing was absolutely... And we would do the opposite. We would build the bathroom before we built a nice office for the customer before we built a nice office for the staff. And so we know how important that is to the experience, and research has proven it as well.
Well, and keeping everything spruced up from picnic tables to bathrooms takes people, Director Bryce. And The Exchange did a week-long series in May on the state's severe workforce shortage. I wonder how that's affecting your division.
Yeah, it does. It affects us a lot. We were fortunate this year to get J1 students to help us out at the Seacoast, because last year we were like half staffed, which created which was really, really difficult on us.
But what is J1, Director Bryce?
J1 is students that come in from other countries and they work and get share an experience in the U.S. that they can then take back and helps their overall life experience. So we do recruiting lifeguards on inland beaches. And of course, a lot of, because of the way the schools are, I know there was looking at addressing in this in the legislature this past session, the way the schools are set up, a lot of kids end up, we still have we're going full bore at the end of August, and the kids are gone back to school or to football practice or whatever it might be. And that makes it very difficult to us. We're trying to do things such as build our structures such that they're easier to maintain. To get it a great level, like instead of having toilets on the floor, they're attached to the wall. So it speeds up the amount, and that adds up over hundreds and hundreds of those facilities. Lawnmowers, instead of having, buying a lawnmower that can mow the lawn in a much more, quickly.
And so just little efficiencies in terms of the physical capital, and that means you need a little less human capital, it sounds like.
Yes, yes. And also, our staffing of our tool booths. We've been discussing, if we don't have a lot of people in the park, that park person, we don't need two people. We can have one person that helps maintain the park instead of just being in the toll booth. And so we're really thinking through that. We like to have people welcome people to the park. That's very important
sure.
to us, but we need to find a compromise there.
Yeah, I've seen a fair number of senior citizens manning the toll booths at some of the state parks.
Yeah,
so.
Yeah.
All right.
Big help.
Lots more to talk about after a short break, Director Bryce. And we'll keep taking your calls, comments, questions, 1-800-892-6477. Email exchange at nhpr.org. Coming up, we'll talk about parks that are so popular that heavy use has become a problem. And again, we'll keep hearing from you. You can use Facebook or Twitter as well. It's NHPR Exchange. Or give us a call, 1-800-892-6477.
support for the Exchange podcast from NHPR comes from you, our subscribers, and from
Edvest in You, a local New Hampshire nonprofit providing college student loans and student refinancing options. Information online at nhstudentloans.org or by calling 1-855-887-5430.
This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Today, it's a summer check-in with the director of New Hampshire State Parks, Phil Bryce. And let's hear from you. What's your favorite state park or parks? You don't have to pick just one. What would you like to see change or improve at our state parks? How satisfied are you with the state park system? We'd love to hear from you. Send us an email, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. The number, 1-800-892-6477. And Director Bryce, let's go back to our listeners. Bill's calling from Groton. Hi, Bill. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Thank you, Laura.
Sure.
I haven't called in 100 years. hey, Director Bryce, first of all, I want to say, before I get into why I called, I really appreciate how you folks treat disabled veterans. The free access is wonderful. People have the right documentation. And then also, I want to comment on Wellington State Park. The staff you have there is incredibly professional and friendly.
Oh, that's great. That's so, one of my favorites, Bill. Yeah, Wellington. Go ahead.
Yeah, it's great there. We live in the area. We do avail ourselves of it. It's great. My daughter loves it there. I love it there. And with that said, one of the areas that Wellington's staff is responsible for is Sculptured Rock State Park, our resource area, which is in Groton on a municipal road. And I happen to live right off of that road.
Oh, boy.
And we've encountered, this is an issue that it's hard to control the role because it's the nexus of state and municipal government and social media. Last year, when I was scrolling through Facebook, there were 115,000 likes on a comment or a post about Sculpture Rock State Park. And it's a two-lane road with no line down the middle. It just got washed out in a flood. And the traffic is insane. And we have people camping in the parking lot, campfires without permits, and not supposed to be campfires there anyway. Now, the staff did try and take care of it to a point, but they're limited. You have limited resources. You've been talking about that. But how do you see yourself dealing with the wear and tear on our roads and just the damage and litter that's created by the activity with that much attention to an area like that?
Wow, Bill, I am so glad you called because, Director Bryce, this is really something we need to talk about. This has also happened at Diana's Baths. It's also happening at Lincoln Lafayette, Franconia Notch State Park. So I'd love for you to address his specific point about that area, but also just more broadly, some of these places are... Some people say they're being loved to death, traffic concerns, locals saying, hey, this is dangerous.
Yeah, Bill, that's kind of showing what we're facing as people find out about how awesome these places are and they share it with social media in a way that didn't happen, 10 or 20 years ago. I would say that, yes, we need to get Sculptured Rocks, on the front burner to try to address that. Do we build a bigger parking lot? Do we move to, full-time staff? I will say there's hope, though, because if we look at Livermore Falls in Holderness, 40% of the police calls were at that site in the town. And we have a Friends of the Pemmy, a friends group, just a wonderful piece of led by the Plymouth Rotary. A wonderful group of people helped create the will to address it, in the community and develop enough support. So we got funding for a parking lot and now we actually staff it. And the last time I checked with the chief, a year or two later, there were no police calls at the site because we had actually stepped in and provided stewardship to that location. And I would say, when people ask what makes up a state park, of course, it's a wonderful location that people want to go to. But there is this element of supervision and control that is one of the key elements, and that's something that's needed at you know, needed at this site. We just have to figure out how to do it, because you have to pay for it in some fashion and be able to find the staff to do it.
So would a larger parking lot, alternative parking lot, shuttle, whatever, would the cost for that come out of the capital budget?
No, it would come out of our operating budget.
It would.
You talk about Franconia Notch. Right now, we expect to lose close to $50,000 this year on operating the shuttle at Franconia Notch to keep people safe off the highway. You know, we have a great partnership with DOT and safety, but the parks, and I commend the park staff, JD and his crew up there, you know, we said, let's just start operating a shovel. Let's not wait for studies and all this kind of stuff. We went in, we ordered a couple of, this is the wonderful part about the way the legislature has set up our park system. We just said, let's order a couple of shuttles and start providing this service, have people park over in the lot, Peabody lot. We started doing it. And we had one day, I think we had 500 people take the shuttle, and they're not parking on the highway, but they still have access to the trails they want to get to. So it's that type of solution, but now we've got to revisit that and say, all right, well, how are we going to go about funding this shuttle? Because we can't, you know, we need those $50,000 is almost what it costs to operate an average state park in New Hampshire state parks. But for us, it was really, the biggest priority was the safety of our visitors.
Well, and for listeners who haven't been following that story, Director Bryce, if you could just briefly remind people who don't go up to the notch like you or I do frequently, what the issue was there and why you finally had to pay for this shuttle.
Yeah, the folks were, we just saw the parking lots would fill up and parks would just start, people would just start parking on the highway.
And it's a skinny highway.
It's a skinny highway, and it's an interstate. You're not allowed, it's illegal to park on the highway. But more importantly, it's just dangerous. If, you know, I heard a story of, you know, of like dog jumping out of a car. So a dog jumps out of a car, a little kid runs across the road. Even if you're over on the side, you can't control that. And there's a lot, of course, truck traffic that comes through there. DOT told me one time, you know, if the wind's up, they've had tractor trailers blow over.
Wow.
So it's and it's nice to drive through there and not see the cars there, because I know that people are recreating more safely. So
cars were parking along the highway. It was a big problem. You got some help from Department of Transportation. They put up sort of cones and lines, right? So
yeah,
people physically could not do it. And then you guys started a shuttle for people who want to do that really famous Lincoln Lafayette hike.
Yes. The Bridle Path, Falling Waters Trail, and so we operate. It's a short trip. It costs $5 to help offset at least some of the costs. I would say safety also helped us, especially initially when we got. It makes a big difference when you have a state trooper there with flashing lights to say, "Okay, you got to follow the rules when you're coming in the notch." So, and then we have the White Mountain National Forest AMC and another larger group. You know, you pointed out Diana's Bath, starting to have a conversation about the larger issue of parking and facilities and all that in the White Mountain region. So there is that going on.
And the issue that our caller raises about Groton, you know, the town is getting frustrated with all the people parking there and overflow and so forth. That's the same issue at Diana's Bath, right? And
yeah,
correct me if I'm wrong, is that North Conway where
yeah,
Diana's
well,
Bath is?
North of in the Conway area, and that's actually a national forest park site.
I see.
It's one that's not ours.
Okay.
So
so that's
so
on
that's
them.
Good. But you know, there was lessons learned from that one as well, and they, I think they're, you know, doing some similar things to help solve that. So.
Other lessons learned from other parks that are so popular that heavy use is leading to the resource itself being maybe not degraded, but stressed. Monadnock, Mount Monadnock, supposedly the second most climbed mountain in the world after Mount Fuji. I won't go there and say that's absolute fact because I have no idea. But what about Mount Monadnock? How are you guys sort of managing the huge amount of people who like to hike that mountain?
Yeah, it's we just had Trails Week that the Forest Society lead, you know, has taken the lead on over the years and arranges for volunteers to come to help us with our trail work. We just actually worked on securing recreational RTP funds, recreational transportation program funds, to start doing work. The Forest Society did an assessment on Monadnock that indicated that, you know, there was as much as $2 million worth of trail work that needed to be done. Because people start, you know, people walk in the middle of the trail, then they, as that gets less desirable to walk on, then they move out further, and then people are coming down. The trail just keeps getting wider and wider. And so they're, you know, doing more rock steps. You know, it's some pretty heavy technical work that needs to be done up there, but it's so visited that, you know, that needs to happen. If you look at trails in other parts of the world where it's very heavily used, you know, they're basically, they put in steps. You know, it's very, very highly, you know, there's a lot of infrastructure there to support, so it's a sustainable activity. And so, you know, I think as folks know, the Forest Society actually owns and leases to the state most of Mount Monadnock, and so we appreciate their help and focus on that as well.
It's been a while since I've been to Monadnock. Do you guys charge to climb Mount Monadnock?
Well, if you enter the main entrance, yes, there's a...
Of the state park.
There's a store there, but also there's, you know, bathroom facilities, which aren't necessarily at the other locations. And we just spent over $1 million to expand that bathroom and also make it available in the winter. Monadnock is one of our most popular parks for hiking in the winter because it gives you a real sort of North Country, you know, White Mountain National Forest experience in the south part of the state, and very, very popular for that. And so we have upgraded the, you know, and that's what we bring to the partnership with the Forest Society, is that those capital funds, as well as hopefully some more funds to help with the maintenance of the trail system.
And the funds to, again, upgrade bathrooms, fix the trails, do those come from operating or capital? Because the operating budget, yeah, go ahead.
It's a mix. We actually are using land and water conservation funds there, and we're getting more funds coming through. 40% of that comes to the state. 60% we put out to communities for their projects, like the project in Littleton, the project in Franklin, playgrounds. So we're using that source of funds. We also do supplement with operating funds, because when we give an estimate of a project to the capital budget committee, you know, it's an estimate that comes out, and by the time we build it, it costs more. So we find we have to keep a little operating fund surplus aside in order so that we can go ahead and do the project. And so that one is actually, I think, a mix of all three sources of funds. And we'll have a dedication. We're planning on having a dedication a little bit later this year, because we're so excited to have that one done after, because it's been on the table for, I don't know, like 10 years.
Yeah. Well, and again, the capital budget for those sort of physical upgrades at state parks, that was approved, right, Director Bryce?
Yeah,
stalemate over the regular budget.
Yeah. My understanding is that it's law. It was passed, signed, and it's law, and it's in place. We've received over the last 10 years about $49 million in capital, and it is critical for us. We have about $260 million worth of assets in the park system. That's about what we estimate. And you need to be putting 1-4% of your asset value back into your park system. And that hasn't always happened over the past because of available funding. And so we are doing a lot of catch up. So the legislature, since I've been in my tenure, has been extraordinarily supportive in our capital budget. It's granted about half, you know, a little less than half of that $20 million has gone out to Hampton for the seawall and for the new facility. But also keep in mind that, you know, they have millions of visitors too. So those investments are serving a lot of people that are visiting New Hampshire.
Again, our number for you to join us on state parks is 1-800-892-6477. Send us an email if you'd like, exchange@nhpr.org. Use Facebook or Twitter at NHPR Exchange. Philip Bryce is here today, Director of New Hampshire Parks and Recreation. And as he's telling us, he oversees 93 parks and their infrastructure, beaches, lakes, forests, trails, buildings. We're looking at how healthy the parks are and what the balance is between attracting visitors and preserving natural resources. Again, we'd love your comments, questions, personal experiences with this at 1-800-892-6477. Director Bryce, since you mentioned the seawall at Hampton Beach, I would like to ask you how climate change is affecting New Hampshire state parks.
Well, I think it's more extreme weather events. I mean, that's what we're seeing. And interestingly enough, we have the two areas that get hit the hardest is the seacoast, where we have hundreds of thousands of dollars worth of damage from a couple of years ago, and our trail system. You know, we have well, not including the hiking sales, you know, what, 10,000 miles of trails in our for snowmobiles and ATVs, and it's, you know, your culverts need to be bigger now because the intensity of the storms is greater. Is what, you know, where our staff has observed, and replacing bridges. And so that's where we really get hit. And of course, the trail system is maintained by, you know, the registrations that are paid to maintain that system. And then of course, it's also maintained by all the clubs that we wouldn't be able to maintain that without the volunteers and our snowmobile and ATV clubs. We wouldn't have snowmobiling in New Hampshire without them. And they help us, but you know, when we go to replace a bridge, that's a big, you know, that's a big project for us to take on. So that's where we're getting the most concern. The other concern, of course, is when you have a thunderstorm. I'm always worried about when I see a thunderstorm head across, you know, our campers, you know, in our campgrounds, and you know, high winds, and you're in a tent, and you know, making sure everyone is safe, you know, when a really, really bad storm, wind, lightning comes through. And so, you know, I just encourage everybody to be conservative. If a storm's coming through, get in a safe place. And all of us at parks will sleep a little better. And of course, work with the park staff if something major happens. But yes, there's definitely, we've seen a big change over since I've been on at parks in the impact on, from these, just the intensity of these storms.
I have also heard that water contamination at lakes is more of a problem because you have severe storms, lots of rain all at once, increases the runoff into the lakes, and then you have increased risk of cyanobacteria. And I wonder how much you're seeing that, Director Bryce.
Yeah, we do notice that sometimes in some of our lakes that after a big storm will get the water from upstream will come down, and it'll change the chemistry of the lake, so it doesn't, you know, it doesn't, or the bacteria in the lake, so we have to, you know, put a warning on the beach. So that's definitely the case. The other thing I would say, though, is we are, you know, we have summer. We're in summer parks. We are also all about winter. And, you know, we can see with snowfall is critical to the success of our snowmobiling, our ski areas, you know, the ski areas, you know, in the rest of New Hampshire. So on the other side of climate change, it's are we going to, you know, are we going to be able to sustain our winter sports? Because unlike a ski area, a snowmobile trail, although I joke with Chris Gamache, our Trails Bureau, about building a portable snowmaking machine to mount on a tractor, you know, you need the natural snow to maintain the snowmobile, sport, which is particularly important to the North Country.
Here's an email that came in from Kim, who says, I'd like to know what is being done to improve equestrian access in our state parks. With all the development going on in New Hampshire, trail riding areas are more and more difficult to find. Some states, such as Florida, have special horse trailer parking areas and even allow horse camping. Kim, I'm so glad you wrote in because I want to ask about horses, but also, Director Bryce, after a short break, I want to ask you about increasing use by different types of users, horses, mountain bikes, ATVs, and so forth. So we'll pick that up, Kim, after a short break. And thank you again for writing. You can send us an email as well. It's exchange@nhpr.org. Or give us a call after the break, 1-800-892-6477. This is The Exchange. I'm Laura Kanoy. Tomorrow on our show, what's next for alternative energy in New Hampshire after the failure of Northern Pass? Email us your thoughts before the show to exchange@nhpr.org. And be sure to join us tomorrow morning live at 9. This hour, we're talking about the state of state parks with Parks and Recreation Director Phil Bryce, and we've been hearing from you. Send those emails in, exchange@nhpr.org, or feel free to give us a call, 1-800-892-6477. And Director Bryce, just before the break, Kim wrote in asking about better access to state parks from for horses. You've said that not only do more people in general want to use the parks, they want to use them for an increasing variety of purposes. So I wonder if you can just address that issue, not just the specifics that Kim raises, but the broader issue.
Yeah, well, I'll start with the equestrians. And we went through and updated our rules a few years ago, and one of the things we did was update them so there was more available access for equestrians on our state reservations. As I said earlier, you know, that's both our state forests and state parks, and we updated them to provide more access. I would also say I think we made a lot of progress at Bear Brook. We have a lot of hikers, mountain bikers, and equestrians, and we worked with that community to get them to work together to talk about how to share that park and have trails where we encourage mountain bikers and have trails where we encourage equestrians. It's not that you can't go on that trail. It's just that if you're on a horse, you know, there's a lot of etiquette associated with that. But if you have a high level of use, it's very awkward for mountain bikers to have to stop all the time. And the same with equestrians to make accommodations for people to get by. So we've been very happy with our equestrian and mountain bike community out there. And actually, we're working on a project to a pilot to do horse camping, you know, at the request.
Oh, wow. There you go, Kim.
Out at Bear Brook. And we're going to give it a try. It's in the old bald field across the street. And we're very excited about that because we do think it's a wonderful opportunity to provide a great use for that use. The one of the issues we run into though, as it comes to the ecological side, is as we think about having a trail for mountain bikers, a trail for equestrians, a trail for hikers, whatever it might be, and then another one for ATVs. You're fragmenting the forest.
Well, I was wondering about that. How many trails can you build?
Right. And there's research out there about disturbance of wildlife, you know, nesting birds and things like that. And so we have to bring that in, too, because it's not, you know, we don't manage, our agency doesn't just manage for recreation. We manage for those, you know, the ecological benefits too, which includes our wildlife habitat. So it's not always as easy as, you know, addressing these as building a bigger parking lot or adding more trails, is trying to find that, creative ways to balance that use. And a few years ago, it was apparent to us with the ATV have been very important to the North Country in terms of supporting the economy. I was just up at the ATV festival that occurred this past weekend, and you know, I think 9,000 folks came. Have become part of a economic, you know, one piece of the economic driver in the North Country. There's people that actually I know have moved up there so that they have access to ATV riding. But there's some downsides. There's no question. There's downsides to that. And one of them is, again, this mix, like the equestrians and the mountain bikers, is having a mix between, you know, ATVs and other uses. For me, the concept of multi-use trails works at low use. But when you start getting high use, you need to look at it differently. So we contracted with the North Country Council to do a work to start to open up that conversation about, you know, what is the how do we ensure that all of our visitors have the experience that they'd like to have, no matter what they're doing, and whether they're motorized or non-motorized, and really think about how do we get at that and how do we come up with a plan to accommodate that. You know, we have a lot of land. We are so fortunate in New Hampshire that landowners are so private landowners, which is, you know, a majority of the ownership, or more than the majority of the ownership, allow us access to those, to their lands for outdoor recreation. And, they're also in the play too, is what is the reaction, what is the interaction between our users and the private landowners, not just state lands.
Well, that's really tricky because how do you satisfy, you know, within the confines of one park, an ATV, a hiker who wants some quiet and solitude, a mountain biker who wants to explore, a horse person who wants to explore and also camp. I mean, you're right. You can't build five trails for everybody. On the other hand, the state parks are for everybody.
Right. Yeah. Yeah. We're the legislature passed some legislation to do some more studies. You know, I think the basis of it is around ATV use. And we're looking to try to find the funding for that to continue to move that conversation forward that started with the North Country Council. I don't have the answer to it. I think it's going to really depend on all of the users sort of understanding, you know, we're all like we all love the outdoors. We love being there, whether you're riding a vehicle or a mountain bike or just walking. And we sort of need to share that and understand what each of us are looking to have and work together to see if we can come up with something that, you know, preserves the best experience for everyone.
All right. Well, let's go back to our listeners, Director Bryce. We could probably talk about that point for another 20 minutes, but let's go to Whitefield where Tom is on the line. Hi, Tom. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Thank you, Director Bryce, for appearing today. A question I have is dealing with Forest Lake State Park. It has a beautiful lake on it and as part of the 300-acre park. The possibility nearby, within about a quarter mile, of a landfill being opened in Dalton. And the state park, of course, is in Dalton. So there's big battles going on back and forth on it. Dalton has put off about till next March a final vote on zoning or not zoning for a landfill. So my question to you is the state park agency aware of this, and are you involved in it in any way? Because you just spoke about, you know, possibility of water pollution at various state parks due to overuse, et cetera, rain and so on like that.
And thank you so much for the call, Tom. And NHPR's Annie Ropeek, by the way, did an excellent piece on this controversy. So if people want to learn more about it, you can go to nhpr.org and check out Annie's piece. But Forest Lake State Park, the caller is right. There's a proposal for a landfill nearby. There are concerns about water contamination. Has your agency taken a position on this, Director Bryce?
Yes. A number of the public meetings, we've had staff there, and actually some of our staff speaking responding to questions from the selectmen. And so we are following that. We've also made it very clear to DES that we, you know, as an abutter, we want to be involved, you know, fully involved in that process. I mean, it's not our decision, you know, but we certainly want the opportunity to understand what the impact is going to be on the park, and also have a full opportunity because of that, because of potential impacts to respond. I mean, we've been told now with respect to the quality of the lake, we understand it's in a different watershed than the lake. And so
that's what the company has said.
Yeah, that is what the company has said. And that's something that we, you know, we'll be following up with to say, well, what's going on there? Is there something going on here? And it's not only the park. We're not only thinking about the park that it's configuring today, but we're thinking about, you know, there's been talk in the past about whether or not we want to have a campground, you know, at that park. Because campgrounds work really well when you have water access, because people, you know, then not just camping, they can enjoy the lake, swimming and kayaking and boating and fishing and all that. I can say, yes, we are definitely following that.
But it's not your decision. You can say, I have concerns as, you know, someone who's on the lake, but it's not your decision. It's up to the town.
Well, it would be up to DES to permit it.
I see.
And then the town can take its other actions.
Gotcha.
As well. I know that when the company was proposing to change the boundary lines and it would have impacted our status as an abutter and notifications, we went up and expressed our concern about that. And as a result, we are going to be receiving notifications as an abutter. So we've been very engaged.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for that call. Chris writes in from Bow, why don't New Hampshire residents receive a discount rate since we fund through taxes? I spend a lot of time in the White Mountains. Parking lots are full of out-of-staters. If I have to take the shuttle, why am I paying the same as someone from Massachusetts? Couple things to pull out there, Director Bryce. First of all, White Mountains, that's the White Mountain National Forest. Again, that's not you guys.
Right.
But you do have Franconia Notch State Park, which is in the White Mountains.
Which
so
is in the middle
hence
of
the
it.
Confusion. So I understand,
yeah.
You know.
I would absolutely love it if our state parks were free for everyone. And in some states, that's the case. But we have to pay for, we have to have a source of revenue. It's very hard for natural resources, having formerly been state foresters, very hard for natural resource agencies to compete for general funds with all the other demands that are on the other agencies providing other public services. And so, you know, we're self-funded. So we have to have, you know, people have to pay. And what we offer for New Hampshire residents for getting into our day use parks is the state parks plate. You know, for $85, you know, I have a plate. A lot of our staff have plates. We've gone from 2012 about 800 or 900 plates to over 10,000 state park plates now, and it warms my heart every time I see one on the road. I wish there was some way I could, you know, tell people how grateful we are for that, because it's a good value, you know, if you go to parks a lot, particularly when you consider that, you know, their beach parks, like South Beach out at Hampton, is like $15. So how many times do you need to go to pay for your plate? But it also provides a sustainable source of revenue for the park system. We are going to be looking at redoing our fee package, and we are talking about, you know, increasing the rates for out-of-state. You know, one of the reasons was that the rates were the same is New Hampshire is so dependent upon the tourism industry that the logic was, well, you know, we just charge the same for everybody because we don't want to discourage our visitors. About half of our visitors to our day use parks are from Massachusetts. But we would need to take another look at that going forward and seeing and go through the reach out to our public and then go through the legislative process to have our to see if that's a good idea, particularly also for camping.
So when Chris says I pay through my taxes, partly that's not correct, Director Bryce, right? Because if you don't go to a state park, you're funded through user fees. So if you don't not paying.
Given our Trails Bureau, Franconia Notch, our day use parks, out of our something like over $30 million budget, there's the capital budget, which is, you know, maybe $5-6 million over biennium. So
and
that's
that
3
is,
million.
That is from the general fund. So that is taxes.
Million. So that is tax dollars. Although sometimes there's other sources of funds like that go in, like the meter fund, you know, was going in. So not all the time is that tax dollars, but it's predominantly tax dollars. And then our historic sites is funded. But most of our budget is funded by the fee that somebody pays to get into the park.
The people who show up. So if you don't show up, you're not paying.
Right. And a lot of our, like the flume, which is our big money maker, if you walk the flume, and you could argue, well, it's so expensive that New Hampshire residents can't go. But if you go, it's like an international visitors. You know, people come from all over the world to visit that site. And we want to continue to make sure that we're not charging so much that we're discouraging our tourists to the state.
But to his other point, it sounds like you're saying you're open to possibly charging out-of-staters a little bit more.
That's one of the things that's coming up, yeah.
All right. Let's take another email. Tom says, Director Bryce and his team are to be commended for their stewardship of the New Hampshire park system. Many of our citizens do not appreciate the enormous economic engine that the parks of New Hampshire represent in our regional economy. In a state known for its fiscal prudence, the revenue generated by tourism and the resulting rooms and meals tax is significant and important. Would Director Bryce care to comment on how his department is being treated by the New Hampshire legislature in terms of the resources they need to maintain and invest in this important economic resource? I feel like you've already addressed that, but go ahead.
Yeah, they've been our elected officials, whether it's the governor and council, or our legislators, have been, in my tenure, they've been extraordinarily supportive. For example, we went to fiscal committee a few years ago to request, even though we have all this deferred maintenance, we had this unique opportunity up at Franconia Notch to purchase the 400-acre Lafayette Brook tract. So we went to fiscal to say, you know, can we do this? You know, it was over $1 million. There was some donation from the landowner. But it took, you know, it increased the park 6%, but increased our flat ground by 30%. And you know, at the time, Chairman Kirk and the committee, they asked really hard questions, but ultimately they supported that acquisition, and that sets the park system up in the, you know, way into the future. So between our statutes, their support for our budget, the capital, you know, they fully supported our request for our budget for parks, which we're extraordinarily grateful for. And also the capital funding. We are very fortunate to have the support of our elected officials to the, you know, the way we have.
Thank you, Tom, for the email. Getting back to Chris again in Bow, who wrote about, you know, why New Hampshire residents should pay the same as everybody else. There's been some controversy over whether senior citizens should get in free to state parks. What's the latest there, Director Bryce?
Well, we took a couple of tries at that a couple of years ago, and it was one of the times that there was an editorial that seniors should pay, like for skiing at Cannon. There was an editorial in the Concord Monitor and the Union, and the Union Leader, and they agreed. And so, of
and
course,
what did they
I
say?
Tested, they both thought yes, they should.
So do seniors ski for free? Senior, at
during
Cannon?
The week, they ski for free at Cannon.
Wow!
And it's. It's an interesting one. I go back to, I'd love everybody to be able to ski for free, to go to our parks for free. But if you know, that $2 that child pays to get into a park is really, really important because it, you know, it adds up. And if everybody supports our parks financially, we don't have to increase the rate so they're not available to other families. And so, yes, you know, senior discounts, absolutely. I'm not talking about not having discounts for senior, but free access, you know, it's, you know, we're living. So it's 65. We're living 12 years longer. So it's like granting free access, back in 62, I think, when that law passed, to, 53-year-olds. You know, we're living 12 years longer, and the seniors today are in as good a financial position relative to other families, students, kids. And so it's really hard for me. And hopefully at some point in the future, the legislature will say, you know, let's do something, increase the age, charge something and allow the parks to charge something. So that's one that's sitting out there.
Well, Director Bryce, before the show, we asked people on Facebook what their favorite state park was. I just want to read a couple of them because it's great. We heard from a lot of people. Beth loves Pisgah over in the Monadnock region. John loves Miller State Park in Peterborough. Beth loves Umbagog State Park in Errol. Beautiful place, lots of loons there. And a lot of people wrote in about Pillsbury State Park in Washington. So that's one of these sort of unsung, lesser known state parks in New Hampshire. Do you want to just take a second and tell us about a lesser known, less visited park that you want people to know about?
Well, the one we have a couple of projects going on, the restoration of the Bear Hill 4-H camp, making it available to the public. But the other one is the Coleman, the lodges at Coleman State Park.
Okay. We will leave it at there. And we'll look that up online on your website. Thank you very much for being with us, Director Bryce. I really appreciate it. This is The Exchange on NHPR.
The views expressed in this program are those of the individuals and not those of NHPR, its Board of Trustees, or its underwriters. If you liked what you heard, spread the word. Give us a review on Apple Podcasts to help other listeners find us. And thanks.